Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan and South Sudan this Monday, May 1st, 2023. Sudan's military leader, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, says his differences with the leader of the Rapid Support Forces is not personal.
If the issue is personal, a while back I offered Hamdan Dagalo for both of us to resign from the leadership of the Sudanese military and the Rapid Support Force and let others take the lead. He does not want to leave.
And Sudan's former Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok says there is room for solving the root causes of the conflict in Sudan.
Transitions by their nature, they are non-linear. They never travel in a straight line. They have their ups and downs. It was our unity that toppled the dictatorship. And we should not lose track on that.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. There are reports of fierce fighting on Monday between Sudan's army and paramilitary RSF, despite the extension of a truce. The United Nations says the leaders of the two sides have agreed to talks and warns the humanitarian situation has reached a breaking point. Douglas Mpugwa compiled the following report.
The United Nations top official for Sudan says the country's warring generals have agreed to send representatives for negotiations, potentially in Saudi Arabia. The Associated Press on Monday reported the plan for talks even as the two sides clashed in the capital, despite 3 days' extension of a fragile ceasefire. The AP reports UN envoy Volker Perthes says the talks initially will focus on establishing a stable and reliable ceasefire monitored by national and international observers. The string of temporary truces over the past week has de-escalated fighting in some areas, while in others, fierce battles continue to drive civilians from their homes and push the country into a humanitarian crisis. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said Sunday he was immediately sending Martin Griffiths, his emergency relief coordinator, to the area. UN officials say Griffiths will work to help bring immediate relief to the millions of people whose lives have been turned upside down overnight. The French news agency AFP reports that more than 500 people have been killed since fighting erupted on April 15th. Sudan's de facto leader, Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, who leads the regular army, and his ex-deputy Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, who commands the powerful paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, began fighting after talks for a transitional civilian government stalled. Burhan and Dagalo have agreed on multiple poorly observed ceasefires and extended the latest truce on Sunday by 72 hours. Each side has blamed the other for the frequent violations. Abdel Fattah al-Burhani spoke to the Arabic language TV channel Al Hura, an independent news organization largely funded by the U.S. Agency for Global Media, VOA's parent agency. Burhani says he has suggested to Dagalo that they both resign from the leadership of the army and the RSF and let others take the lead. Burhani says Dagalo replied by saying Burhani should go and he will stay in place. RSF leader Dagalo told the Saudi Arabian language television Ashaq News on Monday that he has no objection to negotiations with the army, provided that a ceasefire is adhered to and trust-building measures are taken. Dagalo went on to say the only issue to be negotiated with the leadership of the army is a return to a December 2022 framework agreement where both factions agreed to remain outside the political process and hand power to civilians. Since the fighting began, millions of Sudanese have been trapped in their homes, facing shortages of food, water, power, and medicines. Tens of thousands have fled to Port Sudan or other locations while foreign governments are evacuating their citizens. Former Sudanese Prime Minister Abdalla Hamdok is calling on the international community to keep pressure on the warring sides in the conflict. At the 2023 Mo Ibrahim Foundation Governance Weekend in Kenya, he said he remained an optimist about Sudan.
Transitions by their nature, they are nonlinear. They never travel in a straight line. They have their ups and downs. It was our unity that toppled the dictatorship. And we should not lose track on that.
Yeah.
We should have been staying the course
as
a unified front. And I was telling them time and again that to protect the transition, we need to stay unified.
In 2019, a popular uprising ousted the government of longtime dictator Omar al-Bashir. Hamdok was installed as prime minister in a transitional civilian military government, but was forced out when the military took control of the government in 2021. He made his comments in a discussion with Mo Ibrahim at the Ibrahim Foundation's Governance Weekend. For VOA News, I'm Douglas Impuga in Washington.
As Sudan's conflict entered its third week over the weekend, hundreds of Sudanese Americans gathered in front of the White House in Washington, D.C. to protest the ongoing fighting back home. The protesters, who came from different states across the United States, chanted slogans and held up placards and banners that said, "No to war, yes to peace." They also called on President Joe Biden and other world leaders to intervene to stop the fighting in Sudan and punish perpetrators of violence against civilians. VOA's Nabil Biagio was at the protest and spoke to Mohassim Mohammed Ahmed, one of the organizers of the weekend rally in front of the White House.
We invite all the people from all the states to join us in this big rally, because really this is the time to stand for Sudan. And we're here to raise our voice and to raise our voice to stop war. War have to stop now. People dying in Sudan. And actually, this war has been more than 30 years. We raise our voice, and the world lead and United Nations and humanity. We said war have to stop in Sudan. War start long time in south of Sudan. After that, divided Kordofan, Janub Kordofan, and Nil El Azraq. Therefore, they've been, and we have more than 400 campus and refugees in west of Sudan. And now the war extended because those Islamic regime and those rebels by Hemeti and by Burhan from all this year, the war continue now to hit the north of Sudan. And actually, it's not the, now the war is affect all Sudan.
In the capital, Khartoum.
Yes, now mainly in the capital of Khartoum.
You chose the White House as the venue for this rally. What message do you have for U.S. policymakers?
We came here, and after we send in a lot of supportive petition to the whole world, and we send it to the White House, to the Congress, to our Senate. We are Sudanese, American nationality. We need them now to take action. Sudan needs help. People dying in the city, people dying in the border. We have a lot of people dying, children dying in the city. This is really something dangerous. They bombing among the city of Khartoum. And now the food is almost no food, and people, they die by two, either by war or people by starving.
Yes, people are unable to come out like this to organize in Sudan because of all the shooting and fighting. And a lot of people ask, where do the Sudanese people stand? Do they stand with Burhan? Do they stand with Hemeti when they're able to come out? But now you have that freedom. Can you tell us, where do the Sudanese people stand?
People now, they don't stand with nobody, because both of them, they burning the Sudan, the whole Sudan, for all this year. We don't stand for nobody, okay? We stand for stop the war. Stop the war. That's what we need. People dying. Those people, both of them, they have to go to the hell. both of them, we need them now. We need action now. Burhan to go to ICC and Hamiti to ICC. We need peace and love, no war.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Voice of America.
That's Mohassin Mohammed Ahmed, a Sudanese-American resident of Washington. She spoke with my colleague Nabil Biagio at the White House rally over the weekend. The Office of the High Commissioner for Human Rights reports hundreds of thousands of Sudanese civilians are facing violence, abuse, and exploitation while fleeing their homes in search of safety. For VOA News, Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
Since fighting broke out between the Sudanese armed forces and paramilitary rapid support forces 2 weeks ago, United Nations officials say there's been a dramatic deterioration in the human rights situation in the country. And this, they say, has increased the fear, deprivation, and trauma of people who are seeing their hopes for a democratic society slip away as competing forces fight for power. UN Human Rights Spokeswoman Irvina Shamdasani says thousands of people trapped in residential areas of intense fighting are subject to mistreatment and abuse while fleeing from airstrikes and shelling.
People also continue to be forced from their homes by the RSF and suffer looting, extortion, acute shortages of food, water, electricity, fuel, and limited access to health care and cash due to the closure of banks, as well as limited communications.
Fighting broke out on April 15th between the Sudan Armed Forces, led by General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and the paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, commanded by General Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, or Hamidi. The two generals led a military government that ousted a civilian military transitional administration in 2021, but argued over talks to create a new civilian government. Shamdasani notes fierce fighting continues in densely populated areas of Khartoum, Bari, Omdurman, and towns in Darfur and North Kordofan, despite ceasefire agreements between the warring parties. She says reports of prison breaks and of inmates being released or escaping is alarming, given the long history of impunity in the country. She adds UN Rights Chief Volker Turk thinks impunity is at the root of a lot of what is happening today.
When you see continued impunity for serious violations of international human rights law and international humanitarian law, it emboldens the perpetrators. And we are very concerned that prison releases or escapes have also led to potential war criminals having been released. This is of deep concern.
Shamdasani says concern is rising that the conflict will trigger intercommunal violence in West Darfur. She notes clashes in El Janina in West Darfur reportedly have killed about 100 people since April 24th. She warns the environment of impunity and lawlessness is creating a situation that is ripe for further violence. She says it is a dangerous breeding ground for opportunistic criminal violence, as well as for long-standing ethnic tensions. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Still on Sudan, the International Committee of the Red Cross says its first shipment of humanitarian aid has arrived in Port Sudan. Spokesperson Aliona Sienko tells Daybreak Africa host James Batty, the shipment includes surgical materials to support Sudanese hospitals and volunteers from the Sudan Red Crescent Society. They have been providing medical care to people wounded in the three-week-long Sudan conflict.
We have delivered surgical supplies to treat wounded people, because now we are talking about thousands of people who were wounded in the recent fighting. So it's approximately 8 tons of surgical supplies. And now the urgent priority will be to get it from Port Sudan to the hospitals on the front lines that are treating the wounded.
As far as we know, the fighting is continuing in Khartoum and other cities. So how would you be able to deliver these well-needed medical supplies to the front line?
Well, getting the supplies into the country was already a huge challenge. And now, of course, getting them to the hospitals while the fighting is ongoing is going to be the next even more important challenge for us. So we are talking to the parties to the conflict. We're also calling on the respect of the international humanitarian law, because it is also obligation to ensure that the wounded can get the treatment that they need, that the hospitals, the ambulances can operate. It is an obligation under the international humanitarian law for the warring parties to provide this vital humanitarian space.
I'm sure you have people in Khartoum and the other cities. How would you describe the medical situation there after nearly almost 2 weeks of fighting?
We had to move our team from Khartoum to a safe location outside Khartoum because the fighting was relentless and taking place very close to our offices and residences. We are still trying to get in touch with some of our Sudanese colleagues because the communication lines aren't working. So the medical situation is extremely concerning. The medical system now is on the verge of collapse, and according to reports, there are almost 70% of the hospitals that are not functioning at the moment. And we are talking about the time when the fighting is ongoing, and we are counting the number of wounded civilians now by the thousands. And these people need urgent medical care, and also just regular civilians, they need basic medical services. And now the hospitals that are still functioning, they don't have water, electricity, they're running out of supplies. Healthcare workers in Sudan are trying to do the impossible working in such conditions.
That's ICRC spokesperson Aliana Sienko speaking with Daybreak Africa host James Batty. You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, local leaders in the Greater Pibor administrative area are now able to communicate with outside world. Find out why after the break. Marawo. Local leaders in Marawo County of South Sudan's Greater Pibor administrative area have welcomed the first telephone connectivity in the village over the weekend. The Deputy National Minister of Information, Communication, Tech and Technology says spreading telephone connectivity in rural areas creates job opportunities, boosts the local economy and trade. Juliana Shiapai traveled to Marawo over the weekend and reports for VOA from Juba.
South Sudan's Deputy National Minister of Information, Communication and Technology, Jacob Korok, welcomed the decision by National Communication Authority to build towers or VSA terminals to enable private telecommunication companies extend services to rural areas.
To express my appreciation to Digital Network for commitment and taking risk to deliver services to the people in the remote areas like this. We want to urge all the operators not to sit in Juba in urban areas. They have also to access the other areas, which is inaccessible.
Napoleon Adok, who heads the National Communication Authority, says the government built the tower and partnered with Digital Holdings to roll out telephone services to communities in rural parts of South Sudan, like Marawo County.
And as one of our policies, we've been trying to encourage rural connectivity. And this effort was after realizing that a large part of South Sudan has no access to services, partly because the industries are restricting themselves to urban centers and particularly areas that they can access by roads and they feel safe.
Dichan Awol is the executive vice president of Digital Holdings, a private telecommunication company established in South Sudan 5 years ago. He says his company has employed 8 people from Marawo County.
The reason why we came here is in line with our mission, but also on a bigger picture of South Sudan. Marawo is very important. South Sudanese rely on other things for survival, but we think industry like tourism can easily pick up here. And the reason maybe why tourists don't come to Marawo is because there is no connectivity. It's a very isolated place. We also think with connectivity, small to medium-sized businesses are going to do well here, and the life of people will improve.
Marawo's county commissioner says the launch of digital phone connectivity in the area will bring development to the county. Kenche Maijo Korok is appealing to the national government to develop rural areas in South Sudan.
What is missing here is a road. As we live here in Maruo County, we do not have any main road for us to connect from here to Pibor or to Kapweta. It is difficult, and all this request is going to the president. We want roads to connect us like how we have connected digital network. I thank the digital for connecting the network.
Salim Mohammed Zain Salim is a Sudanese trader who has been operating between Pibor and Kapweta County in eastern Equatorial State. Salim says he could not settle in Maruo County due to lack of telecommunication access. He says now that Digital Holdings has launched a mobile phone network in Maruo, he is ready to open a shop in the area.
I had no plans of working in Maruo because I have to stay in touch with my family in Khartoum. And I stay in touch with traders in Juba to get my stocks and be available and even the connection between you and your family. I'm now staying to be in touch with the events of Sudan, connecting with my kids, and now the digital network. I'm now settling in Maruo because of the network and the airport.
Maruo is one of the 7 counties of the Greater Pibor administrative area. The county has limited services and is inaccessible by land during rainy season. For VOA News, I am Juliana Shiapai in Juba.
As South Sudan joins the rest of the world in marking the World Press Freedom Day on Wednesday, some radio listeners in the capital, Juba, say they are hungry for credible information. One Juba resident says nowadays he tunes to this program every evening to get updates on the situation in Sudan. For VOA News, Viola Elias reports from Juba.
Jackson Taban, a student of law at the University of Juba, says he regularly listens to specific programs on different radio stations to get the right information. Sebit says he prefers listening to radio programs that question world leaders on issues of accountability, good governance, and the rule of law.
I listen to Voice of America, that particular program that is only focusing on African news. I also listen to BBC, and I listen to Radio Miraya and also iRadio. All these programs are beneficial to me, especially the program that is on BBC called Hard Talk. That program is very important because it brings leaders, people who make decisions at the national level, at the world level, and then they are challenged by difficult questions that even people in their country cannot ask them, and they are forced to answer it.
Another resident of Juba, Hamis Moses, says he too tunes to various radio stations because he wants to know what is happening around the country and the region. Moses adds that following the outbreak of South Sudan in 2013 and 2016 conflict, many South Sudanese sought refuge in the neighboring countries, and he relies on a media house that reports on issues affecting refugees in the region.
Most especially in the evening hours, I choose VOA South Sudan in Focus because I want to know what is happening in my own country and other neighboring countries, like what is happening in Khartoum. It satisfies my needs because most of my people are not living with it. Because of the conflict of 2016 and 2013, most of them have gone outside, let's say Uganda. I want to know how they are living those ends. There was a report, World Food was like cutting the food because of some other problems, so that I can be able to get something and also back them up.
Moses says some South Sudanese prefer one particular radio station, but keep changing the dial, looking for the best program that suits their interest at a particular time. Juba resident James Akol says audiences are selective. He says some inexperienced and media houses report false information to their audiences. Akol says he prefers Voice of America and BBC because of the trust and professionalism in reporting events across South Sudan over the past years.
One of the reasons why we are so selective in choosing some particular media houses is the trust and the belief that you will get the right information. Some of these media houses, including the BOA, the BBC and others, have been in the business for a number of years. They have that experience that is required. They have professional journalists that are doing the right job, unlike other inexperienced media houses that are not giving the right information.
Taban Loliong, one of Africa's celebrated writers, says he finds it difficult to select a credible media outlet in South Sudan. Taban, who teaches literature at the University of Juba, says he keeps changing the dial on his radio looking for right information. Loliong says he doubts the level of professionalism of some journalists in South Sudan, adding that a lot of media outlets across the country make mistakes.
I am also very, very angry when I read in the papers wrongly spelled articles in the papers and nobody cares about them. And then I say, the editor, why don't you check on this? Who are making mistakes? Who show that they did not get a degree or a diploma? They have learned on the job and they want to remain to spoil our eyes, to make us doubt the good English we know by reading their version of English with the wrong spellings and so on.
Loliong urges media institutions across the country to hire professionals with diplomas or degrees in journalism who can provide audience with well-written, credible information. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
And that's all we prepared for you this Monday. We now leave you with Sultan Clinton and the song Jamila. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to www.voaafrica.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Kwame Ofori, and our engineer, we wish you a good evening. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Take me la, take me la, oh ya mama, take me la, oh ya mama. Ah, Jamila, gelba tay tu mujhe saga budu motoro, gelba tay malama Jamila habibti. Ana wadi laita gelba tay ku, alela lakini te wadi lana waja geliba.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United Nations recently assessed the status of its peacekeeping mission in Mali, known as MINUSMA. U.S. Ambassador Jeffrey De Laurentiis, acting deputy representative to the United Nations, urged the transition government of Mali to demonstrate immediate progress on the political transition, the implementation of the Algiers Accord, MINUSMA's freedom of movement, and the mission's ability to implement the entirety of its mandate, including human rights provisions. Ambassador De Laurentiis called it unacceptable that the Malian authorities denied nearly 300 flight requests during the reporting period.
This threatens the safety and security of the peacekeepers serving in Mali and hinders their ability to implement their mandate. While we fully support MINUSMA's efforts to resolve these restrictions, we emphasize the transition government's obligations under its Status of Forces Agreement to ensure MINUSMA's freedom of movement and access.
Ambassador De Laurentiis expressed great concern over the Mali government's decision to expel MINUSMA's human rights chief.
We condemn the continued obstruction of the UN's human rights mandates in Mali and reject the assertion that human rights are being politicized. This council has mandated MINUSMA to report impartially on the human rights situation in Mali, and interference with its ability to carry out that mandate is unacceptable.
As we recognize the one-year anniversary of the civilian massacre in Moura, said Ambassador De Laurentiis, we are disappointed the UN has not released its report of the incident. The Malian people deserve an honest and transparent accounting of this incident. The United States is concerned by the postponement of the March 9th constitutional referendum, but it nonetheless commends the preparations and progress made by transition authorities on fulfilling an ambitious timeline for elections. The United States offers its full support to MINUSMA and its UN partners as they provide technical assistance and capacity-building support to ensure that Malians can safely go to the polls and see constitutional rule restored. The NUSMA's success hinges on the full cooperation of the Malian authorities. It would be irresponsible of the Security Council to continue to deploy peacekeepers in conditions where they cannot succeed, declared Ambassador De Laurentiis. We urge the Malian transition government to end its restrictions on MINUSMA and to demonstrate that it will carry out its political commitments.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.